I'd like to share with you a reading this morning from one of our great ministers of the past, the Reverend A. Powell Davies. He writes, "Many people have discarded prayer because they think it must be petitionary, which they regard, I think correctly, as childish. But the prayers of the saints rose beyond this. They called it meditation, and a further stage, contemplation. For ourselves, we may wish to call it inner discourse or reflection at the highest level of which we are capable. It is rash, indeed, to be disdainful of this discipline. Day after day, we look at life through petty hopes and fears, and often through our prejudices. Should there not be a time each day for looking at it from a higher level? To me, the best time of the day is the end of the day, and that might be the time, I think, for many people, to look back over the day and judge it. Judge it, first of all, severely. The things we said, the truths we didn't speak, the wasted moments of resentment or foolish pride, the fear we did not cast out, the fretful aims that possessed us, the same aims that have always disappointed us. Let these and all else that need it be severely judged. And then, let us see what there was for good in the day, and how we could have kept on friendlier terms not only with the world, but with ourselves. Whether we turn this thinking toward God or just meditate in our hearts, this is prayer, and the power of God is in it. There's a sort of duality in each of us, a discussion within our innermost thoughts. The nobler voice will be said by some of us, myself for instance, to be the voice of God. Not literally, of course, but in source and spiritual vitality. Others of us will call it our better nature. But no matter what it be called, its presence is a firm reality. We cultivate our inner lives and thereby raise the quality of our living by giving definite times to such discipline. And to the extent that we see the world more clearly and ourselves and our part in it more plainly, we gain wisdom and sureness of direction. And this in turn relieves the tension that the world imposes on us, much of which is due to vacillation and uncertainty, and brings us closer to serenity." Prayer has been on my mind this week. On Wednesday, the case of Greece, New York versus Galloway was argued before the Supreme Court. About 15 years ago, when the present chair of this local governing body in that town took over, he instituted the practice of inviting clergy to give a prayer before the start of the meeting. Until this challenge was started, every one of the prayers was exclusively Christian. Since there have been a few that were not. The point raised in the case is whether prayer has any place at the start of a public meeting. It's a question that goes back to the formation of our nation. The very same folks who drafted the Constitution, which in its very First Amendment prohibits government from making any law respecting the establishment of religion or the free exercise thereof, those same folks started their meetings and their Congress every time with prayer. It's a practice that continues to this day. The court has struggled with this legal issue for years, saying certain prayers, as long as they do not proselytize for or disparage against a particular faith, are okay. In their amicus curiae brief, the Obama administration took the position that non-sectarian prayers were all right. But when the government attorney was asked by Justice Alito to give an example to him of a non-sectarian prayer, he stumbled and struggled before the court and really could not do it. When I heard this, my thoughts were, where were the Unitarians? We do this all the time. So you see, even at the level of government, we struggle with this issue of prayer. Recently, we had a memorial service here at church for a member who was very involved with AA, a mentor to many. And if you're familiar with AA, you know that they have many little sayings, little prayers, if you will, that members rely on to help them stay sober and on track. One of them is the famous Serenity Prayer, and it was included in that service. I was to read it. And when I came to the point in that service and started to read, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, I realized that I was not reciting these words by myself. Probably one-third of the people in that room, most of whom were in AA, were not just saying, but sincerely praying those words with me. I had not invited them to do so because I did not want to out the AA members present. But they needed to pray that prayer then, and they did. And it was powerful. Now, if I ask the question to you right now, do you pray? What would you say? Don't worry, I'm not going to put you on the spot. But if I did, I'm sure I would get a variety of answers. Some would say, no, prayer's not something I do. It's not something that fits within my Unitarian Universalist faith. I work for justice. I help other people. I don't believe prayer does any good. I'm sure I get that. Others would say that they pray regularly and they experience a profound relationship with God or whatever they give the name of the great spirit of life. They would tell you that they need to pray and that they and others benefit from this prayer. They would tell you that often they experience that their prayers are answered. Now, I suspect most Unitarians would say something kind of in between, like this. I sort of pray. I hold the concerns of others in my heart. At times, particularly in difficult times, I seek inner strength. Sometimes, I examine my life and resolve to change things. Sometimes, I even pause to give thanks for the many blessings I experience. But I'm not really sure I pray. Many are uneasy with the word prayer. It conjures up ideas of the recitation of words that are inconsistent with our beliefs. The practice of prayer may even seem hypocritical to some. Right here in this room, I sometimes feel the tension between an uneasiness with prayer and a real desire for prayer. I notice each week when we light our candles of joys and concerns, folks who are in great distress negotiate around the word prayer. We ask each other to hold a serious ill person in our thoughts or send them positive energy for upcoming surgery. Some folks do say the word prayer, but sometimes I detect that they're almost embarrassed to do so, perhaps feeling that others will think them silly or naive. There are those who think prayer is for superstitious religions and that we are too advanced for such a practice. As you know, prayer is an integral part of so many religious traditions. The Muslim who stops 5 times a day for prayer. The devout Jew who offers a blessing for every event in life. The cloistered monks or nuns who gather as a community every 4 hours, 24 hours a day to pray For them, prayer is just a regular part of the daily life cycle. For others, prayer is something we only turn to in difficult times. When I served as an intern hospital chaplain, I was required to minister to those from many different religious traditions. As the Unitarian chaplain, you're the pinch hitter for everybody. For most, the expectation when you went in the room was that you would offer a prayer for them. But it was never easy to determine just what you should do when you visited a Unitarian Universalist. In fact, I remember visiting one man who, once I introduced myself as the chaplain, immediately said, "Glad you came by, but there's no need to pray. I'm a Unitarian." Well, I guess we didn't pray, at least not formally. In fact, I remember we talked at first a lot about the politics at his church. But with later visits, we talked about his family, and then about his fear of his illness, which was going to progress and restrict what he could do, and his hopes for more good years, where he would not be a burden to his family. And although I never recited a prayer or dare labeled anything a prayer, I'm not at all sure that we were not praying. But whether we were or not, what has always stuck with me are his words that were spoken with at least this mask of being upbeat and confident. "There's no need to pray. I'm a Unitarian." In my experience, that's not true. The words of the spiritual that Mike sang earlier sing to ring more true to me, that we all individually in some way are standing in the need of prayer. We need to pray, and we need for others to include us in their prayer. Moreover, I believe that we all need prayer, regardless of whether we believe in a God or we do not. The experience of prayer is open to everyone, regardless of your theology. You know, strikingly, the words of that Christian spiritual that Mike sang, and these words from humanist Roger Cohen, have the same message. Cohen writes, "In a desperate moment, I cried out for help and I was answered. Some years later, I'm still a humanist. Yet I'm a humanist who prays, who begins each morning with devotional reading and a time of silence and prayer. Why do I do this? I need a quiet time. I need to express my gratitude. I need humility. I pray because alone I'm not enough, and I'm also too much. I express gratitude for the gifts of aliveness. I assert my oneness with you and all humankind and all creation. When I pray, I acknowledge that God is not me." Still, many of us struggle with the idea of a prayer practice. I think there are many reasons why that's so. You've probably heard the old joke that when a Unitarian Universalist prays, he begins the prayer with the words, "Dear to whom it may concern." Behind the humor is found the primary obstacle to prayer for many. Traditional Christians, Jews, Muslims understand prayer as a conversation with God. Many other traditions also address prayers to personal deities. Some of us here do believe in a personal God with whom prayer is a conversation, but many others do not. And if you do not believe in a personal God, the idea of prayer may seem silly. You see, we're so concerned about first knowing with whom we are to engage, or if there is a whom with which to engage in prayer, that it prevents us from simply engaging in the experience. Our assumptions about what God is or is not, our uncertainty about what, if any, sacred force there is in the universe, our assumptions about what ideas we would first have to accept in order to pray, cause us to reject the practice. But I think to pray is to commit to a simple practice and not a set of beliefs. It's often in the practice that you come to know your faith and to connect with what's sacred for you. But it's not the starting point. You commit to the practice first, which leads to the engagement with what's sacred for you. For me personally, it's the practice of prayer that keeps me on track. That's to the extent that I do stay on track. It's what allows me to hold the sorrow and grief of others, and there's lots of that. And it's what keeps me from being overwhelmed by the task of being a minister. It allows me to let go of the petty and hurtful and see the positive in difficult people. I try to spend time every morning in prayer. For me, it's a time of spiritual reading and reflection on the day just passed and the possibilities for the new day. I read passages from scripture and poetry that remind me of what I need to get me through the day. And then I pray. At times I feel as if I'm just speaking with myself. But as I listen, I feel a connection to something greater, and I feel a connection with those for whom I pray. Not always, but some of the time. I reflect a lot in my prayers on all of you. Each week when I begin the sermon writing process, and every Sunday just before I deliver the sermon, I pray the ancient, sometimes called preacher's prayer, Psalm 19, the opening words. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O God, my rock and my redeemer. I don't literally mean them. To me, these words mean, may I say the right thing, the truth as best as I understand it. Let my motivations behind every sermon be the highest. Let me be responsible with my words, but also be challenging. Help me find the things that connect with the congregation, but never say things just because they'll please the crowd and find easy acceptance. The idea to be acceptable in God's sight means to me to preach a sermon that ministers, that challenges, that lifts people to a better place, and gives them some little thing to take with them for the week. When I say those words, it reminds me that this is not a philosophical essay, but it's my best effort to bring to you messages of justice and love and hope and healing that can resonate in your heart. When I say the prayer, I see your faces, and that helps me to write. And I believe that that prayer makes a difference, and ultimately, in what I preach. When I've discussed these ideas about prayer in this UU congregation and others, I've received many different reactions. Some have told me that they find comfort in traditional prayers and pray them often. Another person said to me, look, I don't believe in any God, so for me prayer would be like talking to myself. And my response to him was, great, a good conversation with yourself where you really contemplate your concerns, your fears, your joys. That sounds like prayer to me. You know, it fits perfectly with what Emerson's definition of prayer was. I printed it at the top of your order of service. For Emerson, prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life from the highest point of view. Prayer is a way of connecting, whether it's with a God or with a spiritual force in the universe, or with the best part of yourself, your nature. In prayer, we build an honest, private relationship from which we draw strength, courage, and understanding. That relationship may be one that we view as being totally within ourselves, or it may be one that is with God, or the universe, or the spirit of life. It's the experience of the relationship that is important, and not with whom or what we create the relationship. I believe that there are real benefits to us and to the world from a prayer practice. At the top of your order service is another quote, this one from Tennyson, who wrote, more things are wrought by prayer than this world dreams of. And I think at many levels there's truth in that statement. You know, interestingly, I recently read some medical studies that suggest seriously ill people who have many people praying for them have a greater chance of recovery. And here's the kicker. Even when the patient doesn't know she's being prayed for. In my own experience, in hospital rooms of the very sick, prayers with them and their family seem to help many people. When people turn to prayer in difficult times, often there is at least what appears to be an answer. Maybe it's just the way they process to get to that conclusion, but it's helpful. You know, I remember a story. Some of you may know this. This is goes back a few years, but it was the story of Robin Lee Graham. He's the man who set out in a 24-foot boat to cross the ocean. The boat was called the Dove. He was going on an around-the-world voyage in that boat. In his book about that adventure, Graham, who had thoroughly dismissed the idea of God and any religion in his life, tells of his experience with a terrible storm off the coast of Madagascar. And he writes, "It's hard to remember what thoughts I had at the height of the storm. Some fear, yes, fear, touching the edge of panic. But the instinct of survival depended on my keeping Dove's stern to the sea and on keeping awake. Brilliant flashes lit up the monster swells and filled the cabin with green light. Then the thunder roared above the noise of the sea. For the first time in my voyage, I felt that the Dove would not make another port. The seas were too high for her, after all, and I was too tired to help her. My battery-powered tape recorder was soaked and the reels wouldn't turn. So I turned the reels by hand to make one last recording. I said, I've just prayed to God and prayed long and hard to make the sea and the wind calmer. I prayed, God, or whoever you are, please help me. I prayed with my arm locked around the tiller. That was the moment when the storm began to abate. The huge swells stopped coming at me. I went to sleep. When the sun woke me up the next day, the wind was down to 15 knots and the seas were sparkling and gentle." I don't know whether Robin's prayers were answered by God stopping the storm, if his prayers gave him strength to hold onto the tiller long enough to ride out the storm. And I'm not sure it matters. His prayers worked. If you were to press me what I think, it's probably the latter, that the prayers gave him the strength that he needed to endure. So often, the experience of prayer gives people courage and brings them to action. I cannot tell you that prayer changes a God's plan for the world, if such a thing exists, but I'm certain that engaging in the practice of prayer changes the people praying, sometimes profoundly. Many turn to prayer in crisis and fail to give it even a thought during daily life routine. And I think that's too bad. For me, one of the most important functions of prayer is the self-examination of our day-to-day existence. It's certainly what A. Powell Davies was speaking about in the reading I shared with you. Day after day, we look at life, he says, through petty hopes and fears, and often through our prejudices. And he asks, should there not be a time each day for looking at it from a higher level? Making that time is what I'm commending to you. Maybe 10 minutes a day. Powell suggests do it in the evening, but for me, it's the morning that works best. I relate to some words from C.S. Lewis that really were kind of the beginning of my practice. He wrote, "The moment you wake up each morning, all your wishes and hopes for the day rush at you like wild animals. The first job each morning consists in shoving it all back and listening to the other voice, taking the other point of view, letting the other, stronger, quieter life come flowing in." Not long ago, someone said to me, I want to pray, but I don't know how to do it. Her question brought to mind one of Mary Oliver's poems that often finds its way into my daily practice. And I commend its advice to you. It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together. And don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak. To conclude these thoughts, I invite you to join in singing what some have called our Unitarian Universalist prayer, the hymn, Spirit of Life. Our benediction words, in part, are from Sarah Moore Campbell. In our times of prayer and reflection, we receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. May we sing together our benediction found in your order of service.